Welcome to Simply Why, a podcast about money and purpose, where we pull back the curtain on running a financial advisory business focused on providing intentional advice to couples and families. I'm Dennis Morton.
And I'm Katie Brown. Welcome back, and thanks for tuning in.
Before we get started, you just noted before we went live that you avoid getting anything more than black coffee at Starbucks due to the complexity of the decision-making. Is that what it boils down to?
There are lots of reasons that I stick with black coffee. One, I enjoy it. Two, quite honestly, it's healthier than most of the other options. And three, yeah, it can be a mouthful to get out. Okay, and I'll have a latte, non-fat, grande with vanilla. And it just, yes, it gets too complicated for me. It's very simple for me to just say tall black. Thanks.
Yeah. So on this podcast, we talk about some complex financial topics and emotional topics and everything else. And yet we are both overwhelmed by the choices at Starbucks and stick with black coffee. Just to be clear.
And personal now, I have a hard time justifying the cost too. I mean, I don't want to go down that bunny trail necessarily right now. And every once in a while you can treat yourself. I totally get that. But I don't know.
Is that why you cut back to a tall from a grande?
No, I needed less caffeine. That's why. Okay. The grandes just put me over the edge now.
Okay. I've actually increased mine. So on average, we're still the same. The podcast is just as caffeinated.
That's why we're such great partners, Dennis.
Yeah, I noticed. It was showing up. All right. So let's talk a little bit about planning today. And Katie, you found a recent study from Fidelity talking about people's goals for a new year, about how they want to increase their planning. And then we'll talk about the reality of what we see sometimes. You want to talk about what Fidelity discovered?
Yeah. So Fidelity released their 2024, the Year of New Chapters and Living Practically, financial resolutions report. We love this stuff. We soak up these different types of reports and surveys because we are curious what people are thinking and how they're managing and the things that they're prioritizing going forward. And it's also interesting to reconcile that with our experiences and what we see as well. So in this report, they did talk a lot about how Americans are poised for a resolution revolution and that a lot of people are prioritizing different things in their financial lives this year. Many of them saying, I need to get my plan in place. The financial goals continue to be around saving more money, paying down debt, spending less money. But I think some of the things that jumped out to us were the number of respondents that noted they have a financial plan, but yet some of the struggles that were noted as well.
Yeah. So the study said the good news is that 70% of Americans claim they have a plan for reaching their financial goals.
No, I'm thinking no.
That's or they think it's a plan, but it's not what we would consider an actionable financial plan. I think there might be, I'm contributing to a 401k or there's, savings, or I know what's coming in and going out maybe, but especially when they say that 2 in 5 adults who experience financial setbacks admit to dipping into their emergency savings. So you kind of get the sense of financial stressors existing in there. And a lot of these things I don't think would be as stressful or happen as much if 70% of people actually had a financial plan.
I agree with that. And this is where it would be helpful to have a little bit more context and definition around what is considered a financial plan. And I think you're exactly right. A lot of people may feel as if they have a plan because they have different savings buckets, which is fantastic. And that's a huge part of the planning process. But there's much more that goes into a full, robust plan to, help people really feel like they are on track and they know what that track looks like. I think that's a big differentiator in maybe what might be considered a plan here and what we might consider a plan is that we have that future preview visibility that we know is going to change, but we can at least start to track and, get an idea of how people are trending.
I think the reality of this is there's a lot of good intention behind savings and getting our minds around spending, but there's a gap between the intention and when people actually reach out to get professional advice about this. So that brings us to today's topic, which is people coming to an advisor late in the game or after decisions have been made or waiting too long to engage with someone. And we often see the consequences of that. And part of our work initially is to unwind some decisions and unpack what it's meant for a family to wait too long to engage with an advisor. What are some things that you've seen when people wait too long before engaging with, you know, their financial planner?
You know, we see kind of both ends of the spectrum. Sometimes we see where large decisions, often irrevocable decisions, have already been made. So there's been a large commitment to a certain strategy, whether it's around Social Security elections or pension elections, or there's already been a large, say, real estate purchase or something within the an outsized piece of the financial plan has been dedicated to X. And that can often make the rest of the planning pieces that much more difficult to build around and reach that level of efficiency. So I think there's the jumping in on something on one side, but then on the other side of that is almost a paralysis. Oftentimes we see that paralysis set in when things become too big or too overwhelming. And now decisions have to be made. And the clients, the couple, they're just not comfortable and confident making a decision. And so they just kind of put it aside and don't do anything.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times it shows up as everyone has their comfort zone or the things that they're comfortable doing. And the longer they stay in that comfort zone, the bigger those blind spots can develop.
Yes.
You see things like even on the estate planning side, yes. You'll see people go through, you know, convoluted trust planning that might be unnecessary and suddenly they're really covered on the estate side, but their blind spot might be on risk and insurance or on the investment, or they might be sitting heavily in cash, but there's other things that go completely uncovered, where a lot of our role is, or any good advisor sitting across from them, is to say, what are the priorities for you right now? And the sooner you get in front of those things, the smaller those gaps can be over time.
Agreed. You know, I mean, it goes back to that phrase, shed a little bit of light, and then all of a sudden things make sense and mm-hmm. you have greater visibility. But often that's hard to do by yourself. You need that outside person to help kind of pull some of that stuff out and to help give visibility and give perspective so that all of a sudden you have clarity in what's going to work for you and your family.
Yeah. This comes back to setting expectations for the advisory relationship. It's not about having all the knowledge. It's not that your advisor is going to be that much smarter than you. There's, you know, we're all intelligent people trying to do the right things, but it's awareness. Like, how do you build up those things so that you're not going into the small decisions or the large decisions without having an awareness of the big picture? Mm-hmm. And look, the sooner you build that up, it is like a superpower toward confidence, the more awareness you have of your circumstances.
Right. Just going back to the study for a second, a couple of the things that I really appreciated about this study too were the highlights of why planning is so important and how much more comfortable people feel when they have a plan in place. Mm-hmm. 83% of women agree that having a plan in place will help them better handle the unexpected. 78% of men felt the same way. So I think there's widespread agreement that putting the work into the plan is very, very helpful. And sitting where we're at, we see that. We get to experience that. And it's an amazing thing to have those experiences with our clients. But we also recognize that not all plans are the same, and that there probably is another level of planning versus what might be the perceived plan.
You know what I wonder, Katie, is if by plan, you're talking about what represents a plan, if they have an investment strategy mm-hmm. and they think that's the plan. You know I have 70% in stocks and 30% in bonds in my 401k. End of plan.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a lot of times we spend time. That's another thing that we kind of have to deprogram the longer people have done it themselves or kind of relied on their own intuition, is de-emphasizing or right-sizing the portfolio and investment and performance conversation back into the context of the things we can mm-hmm. control.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be a little bit of a shift in mindset of let me now focus on the longer term goals. As Fidelity was highlighting some of the areas of focus for people going into the new year, there's more of a shift on the longer term goals than the shorter term goals. And I do think that that is in response to the very unpredictable markets that we've had over the past couple of years, to say, I really need to plan further out in the future. You know, we've seen quite a bit of an increase in spending, and a lot of people said they want to make sure to increase their emergency reserves. I just thought that was interesting, really focusing on, okay, let's pull this out a little further and make sure that they're putting the work into planning out further rather than just kind of tackling the day to day.
Yeah, to the extent that happens, I think that's a very healthy thing. If anything's been kind of typical of the last 3 to 5 years, it's the short-termism of what's working. Every 3 to 6 months, it was like leadership would change and you went from one speculative thing to another, or one trend that went really fast up and then really fast down. Mm-hmm. So I think to the extent people are focusing on the long term, that's good. But, you know, another timely thing just in the last couple of years has been that applies to people. And one of the reasons why they wait is, I want to wait for the markets to recover before I make any decisions or make any changes, because there is upside to a down market, isn't there, from a planning perspective?
There is. There's so much that can be done in choppy markets, markets that are selling off rapidly when it comes to primarily around the tax efficiency side.
Sure.
Opportunities for tax loss selling, to rebalance, to get back to strategy. So many opportunities in a down market. And quite honestly, to stress test your plan, to look at it and say, am I still okay? That may feel like a scary thing to do, but I think it's a really, really healthy exercise when the markets are down to go back and say, all right, let's look at the long term. Because more often than not, once people look at that, they actually feel better.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. There are very healthy conversations to be having with your advisor when the markets are down. We had a lot of up years in over the last 15 years. So in our careers, there were opportunities to talk people through 10, sometimes 20% declines. But to guide our clients through the pandemic, even the bull market of 21 and the bear market of 22, I feel like the depth has really been improved. And the sooner you can have those conversations and find the same language to speak, the better. And so I think there's an amount of coaching and behavioral coaching that fits in there too.
Yeah. That reminds me of my daughter, you know, every once in a while she'll get anxious about something she thinks is going to happen in the future. And we'll sit down and have a conversation and say, okay, this feeling that you have right now is probably worse than that reality in the future. Let's talk through what that reality in the future might actually look like and how that could potentially show up. I think that's a universal feeling. I think many clients have that feeling of anxiety over what could possibly happen. But when you take the time to look at what that reality may be and how you would manage through it, I think that is a really good time to reinforce that you can have peace of mind, even in challenging markets and mm-hmm. volatility, and looking around and saying, I don't know if I trust what's happening in this economy, in this world right now. There's still ways to manage through that and be comfortable in the process.
That's a really good point. And we just talked about that yesterday, as far as, you know, the kind of communication we want to have with clients, remind them of their resilience.
Yes.
Look at what you've just come through. Look at what you've navigated. If you were worried about A, B, C, and D, they probably have happened in the last couple of years. Yeah, from an investing perspective, we've seen just about all of the risks pop up at different times for different reasons. Remember, you've gone through tough things before. Mm-hmm. You've managed to navigate that. But you also bring up a good point about just reflecting on what could come. Oftentimes, people are focused disproportionately on risks that either have a limited impact on them in particular, or ignoring risks that are out there that are uniquely theirs. But coming back to that awareness, how do we make sure that their focus is on, hey, you're missing this over here, the real thing that could get you? And I think particularly of our most conservative investors, the people who have the least exposure to stocks, are always the most concerned about the stock market. And we say, well, you don't have all that exposure. That's what we mitigated here. But they're still worried about what the stock market's going to do. I said, you really should be more concerned about what the bond market's going to do. That's where your outsized risk is. So just right-sizing that.
Yeah. And on the flip side, to your point, we have some clients that they might have executive roles at large companies, large publicly traded companies, and they have, you know, their income comes from there. So do their stock options. They might get restricted stock shares. And all of a sudden they have a large concentration in one particular company. but there's a high level of comfort with that company. And so it's very easy to overlook the risk that that could create in having that concentration. So you're right. It can happen on both sides.
I like that word comfort. And maybe we'll kind of wrap this up here, because the idea of I'm comfortable sitting on this concentrated stock and the company that I own and all those things, don't wait for discomfort before you engage with a financial planner. Don't wait for the pain point to make itself evident. We all have pain points. There are always things, whether it's the pain point of having to make a decision at Starbucks or the pain point of having to figure out your investment allocation or the things that we don't want to talk about. Don't wait for that to become apparent before building the awareness that comes from a conversation with a planner.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Simply Why, a podcast about money and purpose. We hope you enjoyed getting to know us, how we approach leading a financial advisory practice, and the work we do every day to help families and couples make important financial decisions.
Morton Brown Family Wealth is an SEC-registered investment advisor. This podcast is designed for educational and informational purposes and not intended as investment advice. More information can be found at www.mortonbrownfw.com.